Welcome once again, everyone at home and everyone participating in the studio audience, to the Webcomic Beacon episode 173. This is the newscast for March 20th, 2011. I'm your host, Ross Scott of The System, which can be found at systemcomic.com with about half my voice. With me today is Mark Savory of Autumn Like. Hey, Mark.
Hey. What's happening?
How you doing? Oh, not much.
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing great. I hear you're moving.
I might be, yes.
From an undisclosed location to another undisclosed location?
Pretty much, yeah.
All right.
That's how it works. That's how I roll.
See? One step ahead of the cops, right?
That's me.
Right. All right. Also with us today, as a special guest, is Garth Graham of GCGstudios.com.
Hey, Ross, how you doing?
Hey, not bad, Garth. How are the comics?
Oh, they keep me busy.
Nice. Since you're the guest this week, Finders Keepers, your most recent and currently updating comic, what's it about?
Finders Keepers is a urban fantasy. Follows the exploits of a young woman as she gets dragged rather unwillingly into the underground supernatural community, and all of the shenanigans that kind of arise from all that. Basically, it's kind of, I don't know, in a weird way, it's kind of an Oz story, but, you know, less Scarecrow.
Gotcha. You know, I hear urban fantasies are all the rage right now.
They do seem to be pretty popular, I have to admit. Although they do seem, a lot of them seem to be geared more towards the tweener market, which makes me sad.
True. All right. And also this is today, is Fess of PSI, PSIwebcomic.com.
Here, hey, Fess. I am.
are you going to be speaking with us today?
Or nope.
Just stay behind the scenes?
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see what happens.
Alex,
all right.
Alex seems to be missing, so.
Yeah, I figured since Alex wasn't here, you might chime in. So
I might chime in, but I'll try to be quiet. try.
You know,
emphasis on try.
Every week you say you aren't going to say anything is the week you say something. So
sorry,
we'll just see what happens.
Yes, all right.
Drinking game for the folks at home.
I'll say something at the very end of the show, though, for sure.
Awesome. Okay, so let's move on to our news stories for this week. Now, the news stories this week, as with every week, are collected. Mostly via Eric of Exern.com. That's EXIERN.com. So thanks to him for doing all that work. And also from you, the readers, and from us, the hosts, and whatever sites we wound up checking. If you ever find any news articles that you want us to cover, just send them on over to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave them as comments on the webcomicbeacon.com. Okay. And with that, our first article of the week. Comicsforjapan.com, a new website, has sprouted up in order to give comics people and their fans a kind of rallying place to try and raise money for Japan. As of right now, they are pretty much doing kind of a link collection where people participate and then they link to the people that are participating and kind of a link back and forth sort of thing. Nothing like too crazy in terms of what they're offering, but it's nice to see comics people getting involved so quickly. Have you guys seen what are you guys' takes on this?
Well, I've seen a lot of things like this sprouting up, everything from art cards to art donations, commissions, everything that people are doing to help raise a few bucks, or I mean, even just linking to Red Cross or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's pretty awesome.
An impressive response all around, really.
And yeah, pretty much right away.
Yeah. I was thinking of bringing back, I used to sell a shirt that said English for Pants on it. And, I was thinking of bringing it back and then donating all the proceeds to Japan. Because I kind of missed that shirt. And Garth knows what I'm talking about. That's all.
I know that shirt.
Yeah, it said English for Pants on it. It was pretty hilarious. Okay, anyway. So if you get a chance, instead of giving your money to webcomic people, give your money to webcomic people for Japan. this week. Okay, on to the next one. So, I don't know how familiar you guys are with Jess Fink. She's the creator of a bunch of great webcomics, including Kid with Experience or and Chester 9000?
5000.
5000. I knew it was 1,000. Amazing works. And unfortunately, she has the rare ability to get ripped off a lot. A couple of years ago.
A superpower.
Through Threadless, she submitted the Milk and Cookies I Love You t-shirt, which has been very popular for Threadless. And it has been ripped off a bunch of times by a bunch of different sources, most notably a guy named Todd Goldman who tries to sell himself as an artist and things. Well, good news, bad news. It's just been all ripped off all over again this week. As Jess Fink mentions on her Tumblr feed, there's a Etsy user named, I'm not even sure if we should like give them more press by giving the Etsy user.
Don't bother naming them.
Yeah.
I think they've been taken off Etsy at this point.
Well, they haven't been taken off Etsy, unfortunately. What has
really?
Been taken off Etsy, yeah, as of yesterday, what had been taken off Etsy is, oh, her stuff's gone.
Yeah, like I thought I checked that out, and I was like, oh, seems to have deleted the account. Well, good for Etsy. Nice to see that they're on top of that copyright shit.
It didn't used to be. Wow, that's good to see, I guess.
News, so, as it happens.
Yeah, just got taken down. This just did an update. But it was, instead of having the normal, like, oh, sorry, I'll take that down, or just not saying anything and taking it down, at first the Etsy user's response was, thanks for all the hits, which was just ballsy as hell. Man, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. This from...
Man, I mean, that's one thing to, like, rip off somebody else's work. It's another thing to be, be like, that's right, it's not mine, I don't give a shit. Thanks anyway, guys.
Yeah, I don't get that.
She said, someone said, quit stealing from my friend, and the Etsy user responded, tell your friend thanks, I've been selling the hell out of these shirts. Ha ha ha.
Somehow I doubt they have. I mean, because as soon as they're outed, I think most people just go to the original source.
Yeah.
Rather than reward their thievery.
But you have to know that there is an original source in those instances.
But then again, this is a Threadless shirt, and Threadless is like enormous. You know, I saw that and I was like, I've seen this somewhere before.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know where exactly I've seen this before, but I've seen this somewhere before.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would think, unless the price was like $50 cheaper or something ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have a hard time believing that this person has all these hits are customers coming to buy his shirt. It's more likely people going to see, oh yeah, he did rip it off, and then they leave.
Well, in this case, she's had her shirts ripped off a lot. From her Tumblr feed, she says, I've had my shirts ripped off a lot. Forever 21, Hot Topic, Wet Seal, and every time it gives me insane stomach ulcers and I have to track down the thieving quote-unquote designers and send cease and desist messages and contact Threadless and lawyers. It's called protecting your copyright, and it's awful hard. Now, have you guys had any experiences yourselves with anything like this?
I don't have any kind of popularity to have it happen to me, personally. So no, I don't.
Garth,
I have a dream of one day being popular enough, being big enough that people will rip my shit off.
It's a good problem to have.
That's my dream. That's my dream, Ross. One day.
It's a good dream.
I actually did want to comment on this.
Okay.
Because I remember back in the day when Purple Pussy was ripped off with that cat praying by her bed saying... Yeah.
Which was Todd Goldman.
Yeah.
Todd Goldman. He was a professional ripoff artist.
Right.
It seems.
I wasn't sure if something came out of that or not, but is there some sort of like cartoonists legal fund or for webcomics or people
there,
like that?
There's the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, if nothing else.
There's Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, but I don't think they're going to get too involved with this.
Right.
While you definitely should have a lawyer before throwing laws around, sending a cease and desist is something that you don't need
legal advice for that. That's pretty straightforward.
As a future note, and I'm putting this out there for anybody who's listening who might also know information on if there's anybody that knows any resources for dealing with this sort of thing, like how-to guides for sending cease and desist things, options that may be open to you. I'd be interested in putting together a specific Webcomic Beacon episode about that to get some awareness out there for people that might end up running into this. I think it's a decent topic to approach, but we do need some more research first.
Well, I do know that, you know, for all things copyright, one of the great places to start is copyright.gov.
Mm-hmm.
Really good resource for most copyright things. I don't know if it gets into all the details of like how to send cease and desist and like if there's a specific like format for that other than you find the guy and you send them a letter going stop this or you'll hear from the lawyer.
Yeah.
But I do know it's a good resource for most basic copyright information.
Yeah, and I mean it's a slippery slope. I can't say I've dealt with this issue. I have dealt with the issue of comics having the URL ripped off of them and then posted all over the place without any sort of links back, and that happens. I think we've all seen that happen plenty of times. And there's so many like image favorite sites that just, you know, post things without really knowing or caring where they're from that, you know, I mean, it's a fine line between that and this, which is, this is more kind of ripping off like, and then selling, but I feel like there's still a lot of overlap. And that's something that I've definitely seen. And that is very frustrating to see someone else getting all these hits and links and likes and all that stuff for something that you spent time on. But really, I think the webcomics community is its own best resource, because this was something that Jess got sent a link to by one of her friends. And so that kind of community is really the best way to go about it. If you want to keep an eye on your trademark, that's something that your fans can help you out with a lot, or your fellow creators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, that does about sum it up. If you see any of Jess Fink's work ripped off, be sure to send info to her, but then also let us know so we can try and sick them. By the way, my favorite part of the whole thing was Jess Fink saying, like, you know, if you wanted to go leave mean comments on that person's Etsy page, I'm all for it. Like, just say, hey, community, have fun. Love that. Okay, so that brings us to the discussion section. We've seen a lot of tablet PCs coming out lately, a lot of tablet-based stuff with styluses and without. One that was noted in our notes, the Asus EEE Slate. Is that EEE or is it E?
Triple E. The Asus has netbooks that are they go by the EEE. So what I'm gathering
actually
from
working
this
on one right now.
Now from this commercial I saw on the internet, it looks like a
on the internet.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You can, when you watch like you know web video reviews of stuff, other Blip TV things. There's commercials. So this thing looks like it's like a tablet PC. The commercial has the guy like looking. It looks like he's playing like World of Warcraft on it. And then he ends up giving like he has like this little keyboard and a little mouse, and he ends up picking up the monitor and bringing it over to his daughter. And hands her a stylus, and she starts drawing on it. Which, by the way, I noticed that the tablet is then using the program called ArtRage, and she's drawing right on it. However, it doesn't look like there's pressure sensitivity, though. But in the next year, this could be something of interest. I mean, there's already Cintiqs out there, which are like $1,000, which are basically very elaborate tablets. But I don't know how much they can do other than that. And I'm saying if we can if we can get to the point where we have like a Cintiq level of stylus tablet and it's also like an app tablet, I could be very influenced to buy one of those, is what I'm saying.
Well, let's see. Garth, I think it was you. You've actually done work on a laptop tablet, right?
Yes and no. yeah, I know. I do. My laptop is one of Asus's EEE netbooks, and like it's a quality machine. Asus makes an awesome product. And no, they're not paying me to say that. I wish they were. but I do work
if
on.
Asus is listening, Garth can be reached at GCGC.
Yes. Yes, you can. Yeah, whatever. But I also and I do work on one of Wacom's Cintiqs, and I have to tell you that I've basically been waiting for this product ever since they launched the iPad. Like when the iPad first came out, I was like, "Yes, all of my dreams of a Star Trek future are coming true." and then I was like, "Wait, what? I can't install Photoshop. There's no stylus. Well, what good is this?" And yeah. You know, apparently it's great for playing Angry Birds. But I wanted that product where like it's literally an electronic notebook. I can go around and I can like draw on it, and you know, like I would a normal sheet of paper, except that you know it's all electronic, and like that's the product that I want. And it's great to see that you know we're actually starting to see some products that look like they'll actually deliver on that concept.
Yeah, I can't wait for that day. I mean, I feel like I've been saying since about 2004, you know, why hasn't Apple done this? This seems like such a thing that Apple would do. But really, you know, what we're looking for is something on the more professional end. And yeah. It seems like notebooks, netbooks, tablets, all that stuff seems to be going the exact opposite direction to the more casual end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I'm not sure why that is exactly. Because you would think that something like that would be, because, like, you know, that whole tablet thing has that, like, cutting-edge market, you know, and cutting-edge technology is usually picked up by enthusiasts and pro-users rather than, you know, but it's exploded the casual gamer market, of all things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
interestingly, I wonder if there's a bigger market there than there would be, even for graphic designers and professional artists.
Oh, probably. I mean,
maybe that's why they went that way. Maybe that's why they're targeting the sales that way.
Well, we've seen plenty of artists, you know, do good work in Brushes, the app, and other such like simple apps. So is it a matter of artists needing to adapt to the technology and medium?
It all really depends. It's like I'm learning to color professionally, professionally digitally, and there's a lot of things you have to deal with, lines and stuff. If you listen to the Webcomic Beacon coloring episode with Melissa Kircher, you'll know all about what I'm talking about. So there's a lot of very specific stuff to do to get a really good printable thing, but if you're just making, like, you know, webcomics that you're not going to be pre-printing, this can be fairly easy to do. My theory is that these people are the only, because everybody and their grandma is coming out with like an app tablet now, and in the next year I think it's going to be the decider who's going to stay, who's going to leave, and then from there they'll probably start working on a more professional line, because they're also experimenting with this. Nobody's their first ones are going to be like these throwaway consumer stuff that they don't care about the super functionality of what professionals are going to be wanting. So I'm thinking this is like practice, and then there'll be the deciders, like who's staying, who's leaving, and then they'll start working on the good stuff.
If you think about it, a lot of times what they'll release first isn't the low end. They normally release the high end first, because you know the high end is the people that can justify paying the bigger money for the more expensive product, and then they'll work their way down to the low end. I don't know if I've ever seen an example of a product starting low and then getting to the high end.
Well,
I think it really will depend on whether or not graphic designers really kind of like if graphic designers show that there's a market for a tablet or more accurately.
Who do I need to show? Like, seriously, I will tattoo it on my ass if it'll help. Like, I
would love to. And then we're assless chaps, so people can.
That's all I hear. I hear people are waiting for a decent tablet, and nobody's listening to us. So, but the consumer, the general consumer, is going mad with all this the eye crap that costs $400 at least. I mean, it's if they're going to be making money off of the general consumer versus a niche market like the professionals, I guess. I mean, they're going where the money is right now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what you'll find is that a professional version would probably cost 10 times as much.
Yeah.
Which will be quite unfortunate for us.
Well, the Cintiq is already
10
1,000
times as good, though. If it's 10 times as good, it might be worth 10 times as much. I don't know.
I find that I bear down too hard even on my Wacom tablet that with the pen. I'm like,
by the way, can we sell the debate once and for all? Is it Wacom or Wacom? I'm never sure.
I want to pronounce it Wacom,
but
their
not.
Own website says it's Wacom.
Wacom. Because well, you get the
Wacom if you ask me.
you put in the disc and the audio, which is like going through the tutorial. Thank you for purchasing the Wacom blah 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 tablet. Because it's also British, so it also has that accent, so it's Wacom.
Wacom.
It's your Wacom tablet. That's right, yeah. Wacom.
But, yeah, I find with the stylus, I still bear down like I used to with a pencil, even though I don't have to.
Right.
Which, you know, I'd probably just put it right through a screen if I had a Cintiq or something. Then I would cry.
Yeah, well, if anyone... knows of any tablets that are going to be doing any sort of pressure sensitivity with a tablet interface, please let us know, because all of us and a lot of other webcomic artists would love to see it. All right.
You know, if I had a Cintiq, what the Surface would look like is when you go into a store and you go to use the little card reader and you go to sign your name for buying something with a credit card, and you see how the Surface is all gouged up and somebody actually used a pen. Yeah. To write across the surface.
Garth, don't you have a Cintiq?
I do, actually, no. Yeah. And I have to tell you, I don't know. I don't have a particularly heavy hand, so that's never really been an issue with me. But I feel like if you got a stylus in your hand and you had a Cintiq sitting in front of you, you'd probably be like, no, we're gonna work light today.
I would keep the receipt. Right next to it, so yeah. I could see how much I paid to remind me to work light.
Large Price is Right price tags. Put that up.
But I would need one.
Yeah,
and maybe some yodelers going up the hill. And if I draw too heavy, they move closer to the top and fall off.
So last weekend was, two events. First of all, South by Southwest, and also PAX East had its second time around. And at PAX East, they announced a Axe Cop Munchkin crossover at PAX East 2011. A video game marked "Chop Their Heads Off and Take Their Stuff."
That sounds fun, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of exciting. I could see that. It could be a lot of fun.
I could definitely see X-Cop being the most. I mean, just take God of War, right, and then just put X-Cop in it. It's pretty
even
much
as a Munchkin, expansion edition. Like I think that fits really well. You know, it's got that wackiness of. The plot doesn't really need to like go anywhere linear,
right?
Just there's axes and chop their heads off and it works.
Any guys following Axe Cop these days?
I think I forgot to put it in my bookmarks, but that also goes for like maybe 20 webcomics right now.
Probably mine, right?
I think
there's an Autumn Lake one no one can remember.
Yeah. Okay.
AutumnLake.com.
We're looking forward to that. Also, an article via Whirly Shirley's Twitter feed. Publishers Weekly has a post, "What the Small Comics Publisher Needs to Know About the Kindle." And I'm just pulling this article up. Do you guys get a chance to read this over?
I did check through that, actually. And honestly, it sounds kind of like every other, you know, big publisher deal I've ever encountered of they're going to take a lot of your money.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, like that. I mean, I think it is, you know, the article insinuates that a lot of larger publishers can get away with not paying some of these download fees that smaller publishers and independent publishers have to fork over for Kindle downloads. And that I feel is kind of bullshit. But, you know, that's how the market works. You know, yeah. Unfortunately, is, you know, the big publishers go, well, we've got like 20,000 titles and we can push a volume of X, so you're going to give us Y. And Amazon will go, all right, we can do that. Whereas a small publisher is like, yeah, I don't actually know how much I'm going to sell. They've got no bargaining stance. And so, you know, they get tuned out. It's unfortunate. It's not fair. But, you know, I mean, I don't think it's anything particularly new, unfortunately.
Yeah, I will say, though, if you get a chance to check out this article, fans, they get into some good nitty-gritty about file sizes and formats that you normally don't see in a bigger article like this. So be sure to check that out. By the way, did you guys hear about this article about an ebook publisher? She's like a 24-year-old girl who makes hundreds of thousands of dollars selling bad teen romance every month.
Jeez.
Wow, that's pretty nice. Man, I'm in the wrong market.
I was really rolling over in my premature grave on that one.
She's latching on to the whole Bieber, Twilight, bullshit crowd. I guess.
Yeah, that was actually the
name. A lot
of
money there.
Bieber Twilight bullshit, volume one.
Must be nice. I wish I would thought of that, but I would have to sell my soul.
I don't know. I mean, I would gladly whore myself out for money. I think,
you know, maybe she legitimately likes the genre, and you know, I guess that makes it okay for her.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, taking advantage of. I mean, I hate. I really fucking hate Cyanide and Happiness, but
really?
They're exploiting the people that will buy into the very generic, overused, cliche, juvenile jokes you heard a million times before and profiteering on it. I mean, good on them to exploit people to buy that stuff, but I absolutely hate it.
No, I completely disagree. They're making the jokes they want to make.
Terrible. They're old. They're jokes I came up with when I was five.
Yeah. If only you had marketed them then.
Okay, maybe when I was eight, but...
You should have gone into stand-up, man.
I actually did stand-up for my parents when I was a kid.
See, that doesn't count when it's for your parents.
Where's the deal then? Where was the sitcom deal, right?
There was no internet.
Did you charge them $20 for drinks?
No, they gave me food and shelter.
Oh, well, there you go.
I guess that's fair.
Anyway.
Okay.
I'm arguing something.
Yeah, that news bit about the was actually tweeted directly to the webcomic Beacon by Whirly Shirley.
Oh yeah, yeah. And by the way, as Eric from X-Ring points out, the Munchkin is not a video game but a role playing game. Sorry about that. Fair enough. Okay. Meanwhile, over at Bleeding Cool, we find news that. DC has signed up with Comixology, whereas Marvel has now signed up with the Diamond Iverse setup for digital comics, which means that the two biggest are now splitting the market of digital comics amongst two apps. And thus, you know, the free market will live on and all hell will break loose.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Maybe it makes sense because they are two different companies. Maybe they want their own channel, you know, like they've always had up to now, really, haven't they?
I'm sick of articles about Comixology. I mean, yeah. We cover it so much, and it's like
and Eric,
okay. They're doing this.
Great. Eric is trying to find some not the typical news like that he was telling me before. He's like, it's always just this and this and this all the time. And the funniest thing about this Bleeding Cool article, on the site, the ad on the site is for Dark Horse Digital. Comics anytime, anywhere, coming soon.
Oh, poor Dark Horse. It's like the redheaded stepchild of like the big publishers.
They're like the Dark Horse coming in third.
Well done. Oh, I see what you did there.
Yes. Okay. Another quick tidbit. DC Comics. This is so funny. I love this. This is has this recent issue of Flashpoint where the Flash and Superman have a race, and the comments on that post where they talk about it got so out of hand that they had to shut down the comments.
That's amazing.
Oh, geeks.
I mean, I can't say I'm like really surprised, because I mean, we all know how like internet geek arguments get, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing, like here is the 38th comment, okay, on this post, and the post was called who's the fastest, and then it asked like, who do you think is the fastest, Superman or Flash? Place your bets. And it says from one of the admins, due to the inappropriate comments on this post, we will no longer be allowing comments on the source until further notice. My sincere apologies to all those who came to this blog to discuss DC Comics and their books, but this back and forth has gotten out of control on this blog. Posts have been and will continue to be deleted on both sides of this conflict. Conflict.
Sounds like overreaction. I mean, you moderate flamers and trolls, but really, come on.
Your post may not have included any offensive words, but by continuing this dialogue, you're only escalating the problem. Yes, the factions of Superman and Flash fans out there.
Well, look, let's be honest here. Flash would be fast.
Nothing to do with this. We're sorry for the inconvenience. We are working to make this site more hospitable to those who comment properly and do not take part in these offensive and inappropriate disputes. Now, sincerely, Molly from DC Comics. Now, here's the thing. That was the 38th post. I looked at the 37 before it and saw not one thing that seemed the slightest bit crazy talk. So unless they deleted the really crazy talk stuff, it seems like they just really wanted to jump on this.
Maybe they wanted to stir the pot, you know, for promotion.
I'm pretty sure they deleted some posts.
They must have.
I can't imagine that they just, I don't know, that seems like to have faked an argument.
A straw man argument, yeah.
or to have, built it up to be, make it out to be larger than it really is. Particularly over something as silly as, who's faster, the Flash or Superman? I mean,
I don't know.
Obviously the Superman.
Man, you don't know.
Nothing sacred.
Let's be honest. The Flash would be faster.
No, he wouldn't. The Superman can fly around the world and make time go backwards.
Yeah, but if you're talking about running, running on the ground, Superman is all like muscle bound, and the Flash isn't. The Flash is made for running. It's what he does. It's his thing. Superman has like a whole plethora of things that he can do, but the Flash is like a specialist. Just saying.
It really kind of depends
how to pace himself
at the time.
Oh my God, we are not going to have the argument.
I'm just using some logic here. That's all.
Flash Superman gate. All right,
He doesn't have a cape to add to wind resistance and drag.
Well, here's my favorite thing. So I found this via an article on Comics Alliance. I'm ignoring that. and Chris Sims over at Comics Alliance did the write up on it. And points out some of the horrible posts like terrible issue, sorry, and I think Flash is the fastest, and where the F is Aquaman?
Where is Aquaman? I mean, really now?
Left in the dust. But then here's what happens. In the comment feed on Comics Alliance, people continue the argument.
Well, as I think we've clearly demonstrated here, people can't put down the question, who's faster?
Flash, just saying.
No
cape, just saying.
It's It is.
Even his hair is covered up to lessen drag and wind resistance. Just saying.
So what if you want to continue that, feel free to comment over at the Webcomic Beacon, where we'll be sure to keep that feed open. Why the heck not, right?
You know what?
By the way, Tree Lobsters over in the chat room said, you know who thought Superman was faster? Hitler.
he just like, cuts to the chase. Okay,
great. Oh man, well that didn't.
gotta love Godwin's.
Well,
okay,
honestly,
so,
if you ever seen the end of the world, Elseworlds with Superman, where Superman beefed up Superman with a giant insane gun goes and kills twin Hitler clones. They really didn't think he was that faster because they died. But this is also besides the issue, and it was Elseworlds, so...
Fair enough. So, I need a way to just... I need an official, like, this is the thing I say when I'm cutting off everyone and moving on. And, I think it just needs to be shut up, Fess. I think that's...
All right, sorry.
No, it's fine. Okay, so... a while back, Dave Kellett had the opportunity to give a speech... over at, let's see if I can read where this was at. Oh, at Ohio State University, which was the exact same place where years before Bill Watterson gave a 1989 talk called The Cheapening of the Comics. And this was kind of a response rebuttal update of that called The Freeing of the Comics. Now, the actual talk was a while back, but it just got posted to YouTube recently. I caught wind of this via both Fleen and Yellow Peril, former Webcomic Beacon guest Jamie Noguchi. And it's a really interesting talk. If you guys have time or if you want to have something on while you're drawing, let's face it. Dave Kellett gives a really compelling speech about the future of the medium and how it all relates to Chinese curses.
Okay. I think I really do need to, like, I've been meaning to check this one out, but now I really have to.
Yeah, well, the old Chinese curse of may you live in interesting times is something
to
what's going on now with comics, how we're going through a very, you know, changing, turbulent time. There's a lot of good to be had, and there's a lot of just craziness going on. So he tries to make note of that. And it's true. The things that were true in 1989 very much aren't true now anymore. In fact, I don't think the webcomic business model is the same now as it was 3 or 4 years ago.
I think we actually have a model now. 3 or 4 years ago, I think we were just doing comics.
Get big fast.
Except for Penny Arcade. Penny Arcade had a business model 3 years ago, but I think they were the only one.
What's the model now? Sell t-shirts? Sell.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's a merchandising thing, right? You know,
you're merchandising.
You give the comic away to attract attention to all the awesome shirts that you sell, or whatever it is that you do. Or at least that seems to be the general business model. And then, of course, you do ad revenue and a couple other little things to.
I mean, I've been selling the system, the flamethrower, for a while now.
Maybe you're not marketing
just love this
well enough. Is that new, Ross? Because that sounds kind of awesome.
Yeah, right?
I don't think he's getting the reference.
And yeah, I still don't have the book out, so that's the sad thing.
Me neither.
But yeah, there's the market is kind of changing at a extremely rapid rate. I mean, we've got publishers trying to figure out how to stay relevant and how to stay on top of things. We've got artists on their own trying to do a bunch of things independently. And we've got Comixology doing whatever it is it's doing this week. And everything in between. Garth, I know you've done a lot of different stuff in order to try and make money. And if memory serves, you make pretty good money, you know, doing just the comic stuff. What are your kind of streams of revenue?
Well, I mean, in all fairness, Ross, you know, most of my revenue does come through merchandising. You know, I go to a lot of conventions. I sell a lot of artwork. Online, I sell some artwork and a lot of t-shirts. Don't ask me why t-shirts do better online. That's just how it goes, and that could just be a you know, I don't know if that's a universal thing or not.
But I think because when you see artwork online, you think, okay, well, now I've seen that artwork. I can copy and paste this artwork. I don't think there's a love for DPI.
Oh man, you know what this JPEG, you know what would make this JPEG even more awesome? If it was like 8 feet wide and hung on my wall.
Yeah. Like that, I don't think that occurs to people. Like they're like, oh, so it's blurry, whatever, I'll print it out. Whereas with shirts, that's providing an experience that they couldn't get from just seeing it online. Cause then it's letting them take that and turn it, you know, and wear it. That's like a different experience than they were getting online already. That's my theory anyway.
Well, it helps them to say something about themselves as well.
Right.
You know, it becomes part of their own personality or signature or style.
Yeah. It's kind of a, this is cool and I am cool for wearing it.
You know, I think I've seen that t-shirt.
Yeah.
I've not yet figured any of that out, but
yeah,
it would be nice if I could.
Sorry, I found myself.
And I might sell one. I don't know.
At the back at the Superman Flash comments.
Flash is faster. Just saying.
This is like the Hulk versus the Thing, right? The who would win?
Hulk because he's angrier.
But he can't.
Because he's thingier.
Yeah, he is thingier. Okay, well. Yeah,
even his thing is thingier, or so I read somewhere today.
I gotta say, I can't sell a damn piece of artwork online. I can sell shirts online, and I can sell prints in person. But I'm with you, Garth. I do much better with prints in person and shirts online for whatever reason.
Well, a t-shirt is also a known quantity. I mean, you can buy a t-shirt in your size, and it'll probably fit. There's not like dozens of different brands, you know what I mean? It's like, it's not like trying to buy shoes online. You don't have to try it on to know it fits.
Right.
Right. So you'll get like the extra large is, they're all pretty much the same, whether it's a Hanes or it's another brand or it's whatever it's printed on. So, I mean, that maybe that helps. I don't know. But if you sell prints in person, maybe they'll get you your autograph on it. Maybe that sells better that way.
Maybe.
Although I ask people at cons when they buy prints from me, is like if they want me to sign that, and I'm actually surprised when people tell me no. I'm like,
see, that's funny.
Okay.
I've had the exact opposite reaction. Now the prints that I sell are like, you know, my sign looking black and white,
right,
you know, comics. And I ask people if they want me to sign it. People who hadn't heard of me 3 minutes ago. So, like, they don't know who I am at all or, like, really care. They just think the one thing is funny. And then they're like, oh, sure. Like they're getting something extra, even though they couldn't care less about my signature 2 minutes ago. And
right.
I find that just as funny as the people that don't want a signature on it.
Nice.
All right. Well, we're running out of time here. I got one last bit of news I need to mention.
Sure, go ahead, Fez.
All right, now the Webcomic Beacon, I've mentioned this a couple of times. The website is going to be rebranding itself as the Webcast Beacon Network, in which we'll be diversifying the podcasts, as well as adding a web fiction podcast. I'm in talks right now. In fact, today, I'm hopefully going to be talking to the new host and co-host. One thing that we will be entertaining a thought about doing is readings and or performances, but basically performing web fiction. Now, you could follow this post, I'm going to be putting out a link to a piece of web fiction, which I would like people to basically audition for, either reading the whole thing or reading the selection of it, whether or not you want to do readings or vocal performances, especially when there's web fiction with a lot of dialogue going on. The first one is going to be Bunny Tacos. Once I post that, which is on a 1989.ca group, and as soon as I find everyone's credit for it, I'll post that in this thing as well. But if you're interested in it, pay attention to webcomicbeacon.com for further details and listening to the podcasts. But basically listen to this. Go to this episode's blog post for more information once it's available.
Great. All right.
So
and with that, go ahead, Mark. What?
I just so there.
Snarky comments from Mark.
No, I'm just saying good. So there. Go there.
Can we make up like a Mark Savory soundboard? Anyway, we need a Mark Savory soundboard of just
Flash is faster.
Liners. Like, yeah. So yeah.
Autumnlake.com.
Yeah, we'll make that one of them too.
We gotta go.
Hello.
Well, with that, it's time to wrap up the show. So it is my wonderful opportunity to thank each of our guests. Thanks, Mark Savory, for being on. As always, autumnlake.com.
Hello. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thanks to Garth. Thanks for coming on the show, Garth.
Oh, thank you for having me, Ross.
My absolute pleasure. And thanks again to Fess for doing all of the things that make the show happen.
I'm sorry. I mean, you're welcome.
Fessy Wake.
Once again, I've been your host, Ross Scott of The System, which can be found at systemcomic.com. Please participate over at thewebcomicbeacon.com. Send us tips, comments, questions, and who you think is faster, Superman, Flash, or that.
Flash is faster.
What was that third option?
Fess. It's Fess worse.
Oh.
Yeah. I think Fest might be faster.
He might be.
Yeah. And so with that, we wrap up yet another episode. This has been episode 173. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you next week. And be sure to tune into all the other shows on the Webcomic Beacon webcast network. And with that, I will hereby say peanut butter and jelly. Thanks for listening.
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.